Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It is a fresh week of baseball. I remember when the schedule came out, I'm like, yeah, Yankees coming to town right after the NFL draft. This will be good for the Orioles in a first place matchup. I don't know what to say about the baseball season, so I'm going to welcome Luke Jones in. I will be on Wednesday over at Coco's Pub. I'm wearing my Coco shirt. It's all the Maryland Lottery presenting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm going to need a crab melt. I'm going to need some Coco shrimp. I'm going to need all that because I originally thought, like, hey, we'll all get together and watch the Orioles play on Wednesday night against the Yankees. Luke, I hope they win before Wednesday night.
Over the weekend, I was thinking about Yogi Berra as it pertains to the Baltimore Orioles and the state they find themselves in at this point in time. The first Yogiism is it's getting late early out there. And the other one is I even posted on my Facebook page on Sunday, the future ain't what it used to be. I mean, what do you want me to say? This is a train wreck. There's nothing about this right now that I'm encouraged by other than what we thought all these young players were supposed to be and where we thought this team was heading last June, and certainly throughout the 2023 season. This is a disaster right now. And the problem, Nestor, is I'd love to be able to sit here and say, well, they've lost a lot of one-run games. The run differential isn't so bad. Like, there's none of that. Their run differential is awful. Even if you take away the 24-2 loss, it's still a negative run differential. I don't know if they're getting off the mat from this. And I'll use a perfect example here. Obviously, a way different team, a way different set of veteran players. But for as much as we look at what happened in 2018 and how in some circles, there's a revisionist history that that was attached to Mike Elias and that was part of tanking and everything. No, it was the opposite of that. That 2018 team, let me be clear, I'm not sitting here saying that I was optimistic that that team was definitely going to be a wild card and they are keeping the band together one last time and it was going to be fun and Adam Jones was going to get another shot at the postseason and, I mean, maybe they'd hold on to Manny Machado, all that. I think you would still be hard pressed to find too many people that thought that team was going to be putrid to the degree that it actually was. I think you'd find more people that thought they'd be 500, maybe 75 and 87, something like
Hey, by
that,
the way,
right?
you're too young to remember this, but the 88 team that was so horrific, Eddie Murray and Cal Ripken, they had great players on that team.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like I look down and I think about the era of players. You say, well, that roster should have been better than 57 wins or whatever it was.
Right.
It's just it doesn't work that way. You have to go out and play. I mean, looking at Charlie Morton saying he started World Series games, he's fine. He's 0-6 with a 12 ERA.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, if you can't do it, you can't do it. Jim Palmer and Ben McDonald can't do it. That's why they're in the booth. So when it happens, and for Brandon Hyde and for his hide and him keeping a job, this is how managers get fired in
Sure.
baseball, is when you get swept and you can't get out of your way and it's April and maybe we'll take a chance with somebody else so we can get this thing right and be the last wild card because we feel like we have that kind of talent. I don't know. I don't know. I always go back to Jonathan Scope with you and say, I thought that guy was going to play in the league 10, 12 years and be a five-time All-Star and be a guy that would make $150 million based on what I saw in the early going from him. Off the cliff, like Craig Worthington, off the cliff, like Joe Charbonneau, off the cliff, like Matt Wieters. Not off the cliff, but it wasn't what it was supposed to be. And I don't know what level of expectation we give to these 1-1s in baseball. When you see how BJ Surhoff's career worked out as a 1-1, great career, good player, not a Hall of Famer, and then you become a disappointment when you're a 1-1 and you're just a player. Matt Wieters, not a bad player,
No.
just a disappointment based on what we had, what we wanted, what we thought we were going to get. And when you think everyone's going to be Eddie Murray and Cal Ripken and Mickey Mantle, and they're 24 years old and suddenly they're hitting 220. All at the same time, all when the
Yeah.
pitching's bad, all when I'm not convinced Brandon Hyde's a great leader of men or a great man or a great baseball man or a great manager. I don't know what he is, but He's the guy, as you pointed out over the weekend, I thought was very fair of you. I was a little taken aback when you said it. This is his job to get them ready to play baseball, not to complain about how bad my pitching is, not to complain about we got rid of this guy in the offseason and the owner didn't spend money. No, it's your job is the over-under was 89 wins on this team. Right now, that's the over-under on the losses. And it's moved quickly and it's moved badly. And we haven't had a lot of years where there's been hope here. And you brought up one year, back in the flying period of 16, 17, 18 with Buck and what was going to happen with Peter and Chris Davis's money and all of that. And I'll buy that there was some disappointment that those teams didn't win a World Series. I'll buy that the Delman Young thing is the most exciting thing to ever happen. I'll buy all of that. But the big picture of the franchise is I'm old. I don't remember a team having potential that has gone down this pathway. This organization, this franchise, the fan base has been through a lot of stuff, as I wrote to Katie Griggs. There's been a lot of trauma here. This is one of the really weird traumas that a season in an ascending environment with this goofy new owner making bobbleheads of himself, throwing out the hats, and avoiding all accountability, as well as any expertise in what he's doing. I don't know. It's off the rails at this point because they're like, fire Elias, fire. Well, that takes the owner. And the owner needs to know his head from his elbow, and he does it. So, like, who's firing who? Who's in charge? All of these people were hired by John Angelos, right? Like, they really were. So, I don't think Mr. Moneybags is rolling around the clubhouse showing off his bobblehead to Jordan Westberg and talking baseball with these guys. I don't know. If Elias isn't in charge, and if Elias can't fire Hyde and doesn't want to fire Hyde, it feels like their hides are tied together and they have this new owner and he's put, I put $80 million into the team. You told me Charlie Morton can pitch. Like, I don't know what any of this is. And my wife asked me about it on Sunday night. I'm like, I don't know. This guy's run a money thing in a bunch of funeral homes and he doesn't look like he knows anything about baseball. So I'm wondering, like, they get rid of Mike Elias. Who's the one hiring the next general manager? Nobody knows anything about baseball. So I'm throwing that at you and saying they haven't fired Greg Bader yet. Greg Bader's been promoted and is running the television network, which is horrible. By the way, Masson's broadcast, all the announcers are muted in how critical they can be during this really challenging time for the franchise. And the broadcast has become embarrassing now. I mean, Rob Long apologizing for the team after they're getting swept in Detroit, and you put the post game on, you wouldn't know whether they won or lost because that's the way they're being told to broadcast by that great broadcaster, Greg Bader. The whole thing's a train wreck, and I don't know where the leadership is. That and I wrote a letter to Katie Griggs the other day. Where are the leaders that are going to straighten out the baseball if you don't believe in Mike Elias and Brandon Hyde? If you don't believe in them, who are you looking to make decisions, real decisions?
Well, I mean, a couple things there. First, their structure is not like the Ravens. My assumption, and he even has a vice, president title, vice president title, when you're talking about baseball operations, Mike Elias would fire Brandon Hyde. Now, that said, I'm sure, that's certainly something you're going to at least keep ownership in the loop on. So just to, whereas with the Ravens, Eric DaCosta does not, obviously, he didn't hire John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh was head coach before DaCosta, but they don't have a structure like Eric or Ozzie Newsome did not have autonomy in hiring John Harbaugh, as you know. It's not done that way. The
Ozzie
general
Newsome
manager.
swears, and he's never lied to me, that he didn't know Brian Billick was getting fired till
Right.
Steve Bisciotti came in and told him
It's
he was
well, it's
firing him.
because the general manager answers to the owner, the head coach answers to the owner. The rate or the Orioles structure, at least it was
But we don't
when.
know what the structure is because there ain't never been a structure here, dog. I mean, seriously, they've been structured since Lucchino left. There's been Peter and
But my
Steve.
point is that Mike Elias hired Brandon Hyde, right? I mean, okay, was John Angelos and Lou Angelos in the loop to some degree? Did
And
they sit
Brady
in,
Anderson at that point.
did they sit, Well,
Maybe a
Brady
little was
bit.
eating
Brady was
dinner
on
with
his way.
John and Lou down at the Four Seasons to make up decisions. Like,
But he
that's
was on
where
his
the
way out.
structure was until the day he wasn't anymore, right?
Yeah,
Like,
right.
literally.
I mean, but Brady was kind of out the
But
door
Brady
as.
Anderson was the special advisor to ownership. That's a whole lot more than a title where Adam Jones is off, eating paella in Spain right now. You know what I mean? Like, there's a different level of being involved and involved. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
I mean, George Brett was involved in Kansas City, right? Cal Ripken sitting behind home plate. Here's the thing now, Luke. This is the crazy thing, because they brought Ripken into this, and him and his wife sit behind home plate, and his kids are on the podcast every day saying whatever they allow him to say, right? Cal Ripken looks like he wants to be involved, right? Because he's there 5 nights a week, and Cal's always wanted to run the Nationals and run the Orioles, and Cal was going to run this, and Cal sold, had baseball team. These people on the street are nuts. The fans are nuts. I've had three fans come up to me and say, well, they're grooming Cal. Grooming, so you know who they voted for. Grooming, they're grooming Cal. Dude, Cal's 65 years old. Cal ain't run anything. Cal sold these baseball teams. He's living with his wife down in Annapolis. Cal Ripken wants to work 80 hours a week doing Mike Elias's job that he doesn't know how to do. I mean, people are nuts, but I'm just telling you, they're believing that Cal Ripken's going to usurp that George Brett role and come back and be the special general manager to the speaker advisor to the baseball operations. I mean, people are thinking Cal Ripken is coming to rescue them. If that happens, I'll be shocked. I mean, and I'll sit here and poo-poo it until such moment, because I had John Maroon on the show 4 months ago. I've known Cal for 35 years. But, nasty, he sold his team so he could come run the Orioles. Rubenstein told him to sell them teams. And people don't even know how to pronounce Rubenstein's. They don't even know his name. They come up to me with all sorts of weird concoctions. But this is what I get on barstools when I roll to the zoo on Friday night, when I'm sitting doing the show at Coco's. People come up and they're looking for solutions in their own conspiracy mind. And I'm thinking, no, there's a billionaire owner who likes his ego, who's throwing out hats and wants to make everyone happy, including keeping Greg Bader, and everybody keeps their jobs. We don't want to rock any boats. We don't want to do anything. We're going to hire this young lady from Seattle to come in, and she's going to settle things down. We're going to get an all-star game. And you know what's going to happen, Luke? What's going to happen is team's going to be good. Team's going to win 95 or 100 games because they're really good. So we don't have to worry about that. We have genius Mike Elias. We Brandon Hyde, manager of the year. They've won 192 games the last 2 years. We're fine. Gunnar Henderson's going to compete for an MVP. Holiday's going to come on. Rutschman's going to rebound. We're going to be fine. We don't have to worry about making baseball decisions. It's kind of like where Bisciotti is right now. I mean, he thinks of Harbaugh as a son. I've had many people tell me that. Eric DaCosta, he thinks of him as a son. They're not firing anybody or anything in their football operation because Steve wants no part of it. He doesn't want his hands messy and have tears under his eyes and be all bleached out the way he was when he fired Billick that day, which is 20 years ago now. But the baseball thing, dude, I don't have tea leaves on this because I know this owner doesn't know what he's doing. If he knew what he was doing, he wouldn't have had a bobblehead last week. Let's start with that. So I know he's getting bad advice. I know the people around him. I know Greg Bader's wrecking the television network as I'm watching it. And the team stinks. And that's something, dude. You and I didn't spend 5 seconds of oxygen in the last since he bought the team in the last year since Peter died on anything about the team imploding. This is unthinkable. It's unthinkable that they have baseball decisions now because of all the other decisions they have with government, the stadium, leadership, sales, just all of it. All of it is problematic. But the team was never anything we discussed that they could be 10 and 17. No way.
Yeah. All right. Let's get our feet back on the
Go
ground here a
ahead.
little bit, because everything you just talked, and look, I'm not disagreeing with what you just
Well, that's
said
what I've been
about
thinking
the,
about all
but
weekend.
that's the 30,000 foot look at this right now in terms of
Well,
where
if
they
it's
are right
fire the
now.
manager, my question is who's doing it and where's the
Would be Mike.
structure of a
I already
baseball
said it. It would
operation
be
if you do
Mike
that?
Elias. Mike Elias. He's the executive vice president and general manager of the Baltimore Orioles. He's in charge of baseball operations. They don't have a structure where the manager and the general manager answers to the owner, like the way that the Ravens head coach and general manager
Well, if
answers
the
to the
team
owner,
on the field stinks,
unless
it's the
something
general
has changed.
manager's fault. I'll
So,
tell you that. Y'all Yogi Berra that for you,
sure.
right?
I mean, but let's deal with where they, let's put our feet on the ground. It's April 28th. Okay. It's the last week of April. This team's in last place. They're 7 games under 500. They have the worst run differential in the American League. It's bad. Is it still early? Sure. Are they sh exhibiting any meaningful signs of turning this thing around? No, not at all. Okay, you can look at some of the Statcast data. Are they hitting into some tough luck? Yeah. Has every one of their young players truly been as bad as what their actual numbers are compared to the batted ball profile and expected numbers? Sure. No, they haven't, but doesn't mean it's been good. Doesn't mean that I can sit here with any level of conviction or honesty and say that there are reasons to be optimistic right now. There aren't. All the reasons to be optimistic are priors that continue to evolve and change based on what we saw last year. I mentioned the 2018 team as a comp, just in terms of not in terms of where they were with veteran players and all that. I mean, of course, it's completely different in that regard. But what about the previous year maybe lent itself to seeing what happened in 2018? Well, that September, the Orioles, by late August of 2017, they were still in wild card contention. And then they went 7-21 over the final month of the season and completely bottomed out. Now, people at the time were hoping that that was more aberration, more of an outlier. You still believed in Buck Showalter. You still had Manny Machado. You still had Adam Jones. Go down the list, right? They signed Alex Cobb that spring. They signed what? I guess they had Cash. I think they had Andrew Cashner at that point in time. Yeah, I try to block out those years because they were such a disaster. But the point was, no one went into opening day of 2018 saying, "I think this team's going to lose 115 games." Was that team, from a true talent level standpoint, a 115 loss team? Probably not. But sometimes when you get off to such a bad start, you never do get off the mat. And it just spirals and it just snowballs and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And then they sold off all their players at the trade deadline. And yeah, like it, then at that point, you were fully into a rebuild, whether you liked it or not. Whether you had fought it off for the last couple years before that or not, they were in a rebuild. So, I bring that up by saying sometimes you can keep saying it's early and you're just not going to turn things around. I mean, let's use Sunday as a perfect example. Jordan Westberg was out of the lineup because of a hamstring. Adley Rutschman got hit on the hand. It doesn't sound like it's serious, but it was enough to keep him out of the lineup. And Cedric Mullins was under the weather. Tyler O'Neill went on the IL on Saturday. Colton Cowser is still on the IL after breaking his thumb in Toronto on the fourth day of the season. So we've talked about the pitching at length. Now you're starting to have some issues with some position players. Now, again, Sunday was that example. And I mean, my goodness, you looked at that lineup. I made the comment on social media that looked like the travel squad that you take to Lakeland playing the Tigers down in spring training. I mean, against Tarek Skubal, forget it. It was good they weren't no hit. I mean, that's about the best I could say about whatever that was Sunday. But look, they're not firing the general manager in April. They shouldn't fire the general manager in April. But in terms of what we're seeing as far as changes they can make now or in the coming weeks or by say Memorial Day, which is less than a month away at this point in time, you do look at the coaching staff. First of all, even before that, you do have to start looking at making some changes to your roster. Whether it's bringing Kobe Mayo up here to get, some fresh blood, whether it's DFAing a couple of your bench guys that aren't doing anything. So you start with
Well, where are
that.
you with Charlie Morton? Let's start with that. With your $15
Yeah,
million
I
pitcher
mean,
that you want to give the ball every fifth day and think at some point maybe we'll get 5 or 6 innings out of him or no?
I think you go the route, and I assume we're going to see Kyle Gibson make his season debut this week. Tuesday's a TBD. I assume that's him. Although I'll point out he made his last start for Norfolk on the 20th. I kind of got a little bit of a indication that maybe he was dealing with a little bit of a back soreness, things like something like that. Nothing major, like nothing that shut him down or anything like that, but maybe complicated, what him making his debut, not in Detroit, but now this week. But assuming that's still the plans, assuming that's still what we see, you kind of look at their off days. They don't need a fifth starter for, about another week and a half. or so, because they have an off day Thursday, they have an off day Monday, this coming Monday. Do you move Morton to the bullpen and try to see if you can give him three side sessions, pitches in garbage time, whatever, and you try to see if there's any meaningful improvement being made? I don't know, man. I mean, it's $15 million, but at some point in time, it's $15 million that's spent either way. And are you really seeing enough to that there's any sign whatsoever that he's turning this thing around, or is it just getting worse? I mean, okay, he didn't give up 10 runs on Saturday, but he's walking people. I mean, he's walking more
What
than a
is going to
guy
get
per
you
inning.
back to 500 to be in contention to talk in July about
I just
maybe
don't
making a
know.
wild card run?
Well, and that's where you look at this thing and,
Who's your
who.
best pitcher you can send out there every single night? If he's still the guy, then you send him out there.
I mean, he's not. I mean, he's not. But the problem is that, you've got all the pitchers you have on the IL right now. I mean, okay, I get it. Chase McDermott and Trevor Rogers have started minor league rehab assignments. Eflin's throwing again. Grayson Rodriguez sounds like it's not catastrophic. They said a very minor lat strain. To be clear, he's not coming back anytime soon. But that's what you're looking at right now. I mean, Brandon Young, they tried that. It hasn't looked good in two starts.
Was there
So,
some stat out there about pitchers being drafted by Elias and getting to the big leagues that I saw over the weekend that was
Brandon
just
Young's a first.
outrageous?
They haven't drafted a pitcher and had him debut in the major leagues yet. Brandon Young, they signed. Remember that was the COVID year where there was only five rounds in the draft.
Dude, that's an
Brandon,
unbelievably
this
damning
is why you've heard me talking
stat
about
that
this
you
for years.
would make Elias fireable. You know what I mean? Like in that way. We were so awful for so long,
But they haven't drafted
and
pitcher. I mean, they haven't drafted pitchers with it. They haven't used any meaningful draft capital on pitchers. I mean, they just haven't.
well, but
And
the
when I say
fans
meaningful,
call
meaning
this
like,
the
meaning
fans
the
on the
first few
internet call
rounds.
this the rebuild. During the rebuild back in 18, 19, 20, when they lost on, it was a tank. It wasn't a rebuild. It was being awful on purpose for long stretches of time to draft Colton Cowser and to draft Heston Kerstad and to draft Adley Rutschman when you're really bad.
I mean,
And
they
to
didn't
get those
start
guys to
as a
the
tank.
field.
It started in 2018, but they did nothing to
Well, they got Elias
accelerate.
in here because he was part of the tank in Houston, right? So he knew how to do it. That was, but again, that's another philosophy. It's John Angelos's baseball team out there right now, for better or worse. Let's blame it on him. I know Rubenstein would like that. John didn't give himself a bobblehead. David has. Just standing on the outside, I am shaking my head, dude, at all of it. At the leadership, the ownership, owning the pitching, where they are, what they've promised the fans, the fact that they don't take phone calls from people like me because they're too good and I'm too dirty Dundalk to pick up the phone and meet new people. Shame on all of them. I'll sit there and talk about it. I'll watch it. I'll watch the Yankees beat their heads in this week. I'll be at Coco's on Wednesday. I'm in. I haven't gone anywhere, but I don't know what the solution here is other than better ownership. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like the owner's
I mean,
not
at the same,
the owner's the one that gave the $80 million to sign Morton, sign all these guys.
Mike Elias signed the players, though.
Correct.
I mean,
Correct. And
look,
that's why I'm saying Elias hasn't drafted a pitcher that's been to the big leagues. He's had all of these 1-1s that are all supposed to go to the Hall of Fame. And you draft them and you get them up here and then they hit
they're not looking
210.
very good.
And I have to say, maybe Mike Elias is not the genius that maybe Locken Four is smarter than I think he is. Or just throwing
Well,
darts.
I mean, look, no one's absolved here, and that's why I'll reject the premise that, well, this isn't Brandon Hyde's fault. He didn't put the roster together. And look, I am not at all saying it's all Brandon Hyde's fault. In the same way that I would say, in defense of Mike Elias, even though I've been extremely underwhelmed by the work that he's done to improve the roster, going back to the trade deadline of 2023 when Fuji and Jack Flaherty were your big ticket deadline acquisitions for a team that ultimately won 101 games. It's also very difficult to anticipate and cover for the number of pitching injuries that they've had. Now, that doesn't mean that the organization is absolved from a gap in their strength and conditioning, how they're coaching their pitchers, how they're developing their pitchers. But my point is, you can only say next man up so many times until there's just where they are right now, where they're still giving Charlie Morton starts at the very least. Not just because he has a $15 million salary, but also because who are you bringing up from Norfolk? I mean, Brandon Young is the best option, and you've seen how that's looked.
By the way,
So
and Brandon Young and Cade Povich and McDermott when he comes and what all these guys, these are guys that they knew. They know in their heart of hearts, if you ask Mike Elias back in January, if those three guys are in our rotation in July,
all at the same
we're
time,
not going
yeah.
to win. We're
Sure.
not good. They're all Norfolk pitchers. And the notion that Charlie Morton and Kyle Gibson and Albert Suarez were going to be fourth or fifth starter kind of players. I mean, that's really what they were. I don't think you were paying Charlie Morton to be a number two. You were
No,
paying
no.
Charlie Morton old money to be a reliable four, a guy that was going to have a 5 ERA, but go out there every fifth day and take the ball. And if you could score six, you'd win. And if you only score four, you'd lose. And that's kind of that was where the floor needed to be for Charlie Morton and for all of these guys
Sure.
was be a capable fourth or fifth starter, be a guy that's going to get me a 4.8, 5.2 ERA. We can win with that, but just be reliable, have your arm not fall off. Give me five innings, dude. You got to give me, if your ERA is going to be five, give me five innings. And we can live with that 3 out of 5 days if we have Eflin and we have, I don't know, pick somebody else that's not pitching anymore either. Any of these guys that were supposed to, Rodriguez, the guys that were top of the rotation guys. We need two of them and three of the rest of you. And we need you to stay healthy and give me five innings, all of you. We're a month into this. I don't know where their next five inning starts coming from. I mean, maybe Shigano because he's been the most consistent. Kramer, I mean, Kramer to me was a guy you bragged about being a three that always looked more like a five to me and always looked more like, would the Yankees send
No,
him out
I
there?
never said he was a three. I said he was a league average. I've said he's a league average
That
starter.
makes him a three or a four. What does that make him? Something like
He's
that.
more of a four.
Okay, fair
It
enough.
depends on the team, right? A league
Right.
average starter for some teams is a number two or number three starter. I mean, the Orioles are one of the worst teams in baseball right now. I mean, whether
Well,
that's
when
going
all
to
your starters have ERAs of 10 and 11 and 12,
other than
yeah.
Sagano, yeah. I mean, I you and I were texting a little bit Sunday in the aftermath of being swept in Detroit. I mean, I think you can I'm at a loss for this. I mean, this is, let me be clear. Did I love the Charlie Morton signing? No, I did not. It kind of felt weird to me. It felt, this guy was contemplating retirement. He wasn't great for the Braves last year. That said, he wasn't awful last year. He had a
But you don't want to spend $15 million on a safety valve.
understood.
Right, yeah.
But even if you gave him $5 million, right? Even if you signed him for $5 million, he had a 4.19 ERA last year. He made 30 starts, threw 165 in the third innings. Was he great the second half of the season? No. But you know what his ERA was in September in five starts? 3.86. I mean, it's quite a jump to go from that to what this is. And I don't care if you're Bill James. I don't care if you have the best projection models in the world. You're not going to have any that are going to spit out Charlie Morton having an 11 ERA after, six starts into the season. I mean, it's kind of unheard of to be that bad, to be that extremely horrible. And that's either one, that's even working under the, if he had a 6.5 ERA right now, you would still be saying he might be washed up, right? He might just be done. But when it's 10.36, you're just kind of pulling your hair out. Like, this is the 1% worst case scenario of even the bad outcomes that you could envision. So, and it feels like they're dealing with a lot of that. Let me be clear when I say this. This is not me making an excuse for them. This team has been bad. It's been really bad. It's also been very unlucky too. It's bad and hapless right now because, like I said, you look at the batted ball data and their batting average for balls in play and different things like that, and it says that it shouldn't be as bad as what the output is right now. Problem is, I can't look at that and say I have any confidence that it's going to improve to any meaningful degree now to say that they're going to be fine and they're going to be a wild card contender and all that, because now you're looking at it through the lens of, okay, let's throw out the 95 wins, pie in the sky scenarios at this point in time. You know, think about what your record needs to be just to be an 87 win team. You know, that's an 87 win team is playing 12 games over 500 for the season. They're 7 under now. So think about what you have to be just to get to that point for the rest of the season. Now you start looking at it, and that's where, you know, I said it in jest, and it's, you know, it's a funny Yogi Berra, you know, a Yogiism, but you know, without a swift turnaround here, it's getting late early. I mean, it is through that lens. And then you start getting into, and this is where I really have my most concern at this point. Like, look, if you had told me their pitching would be last, or I think it, you know, I think they wake up Monday morning, it's 28th in starter ERA in the majors, I'm not shocked by that, right? I mean, I'm not. We talked about the starting pitching all offseason, even before the injuries started piling up. What I am shocked by is, and I don't say this to be personal, I'm shocked by how little fight this team's showing. I mean, when you draft 1-1s, when you talk about a growth mindset, when you talk about investing meaningful 1-1 or the second overall pick or the fifth overall pick, or even get outside the top five, just first and second and third and fourth round kind of guys, you're also trusting that you're doing homework, that these guys have a certain level of character. And when I say character, I don't mean choir boys or anything like that. I mean that they've got conviction, they've got confidence in what they do. They, you know, you feel that they can handle adversity. I mean, we go back to Adley Rutschman at Oregon State. You know, we forget about it because it was six, you know, 6+ years ago when, or 6 years ago when he was drafted. But you know, go look at him at Oregon State. I mean, he had to rebuild his swing. You know, he struggled early in his collegiate career, and there was a thought at that point in time that, oh, this guy has a growth mindset and can overcome adversity, and that's why he's worthy of being a 1-1 on top of being the best player in college baseball at the time. And I'm using Rutschman as an example here. I'm not picking on him individually, but this group collectively. I said it how many times to you last July and August and September. I really believe this. This wasn't me trying to look through orange-colored glasses or anything like that. I really thought that that was going to help them long term in terms of, you know, kind of callousing these guys up and going through some adversity and going through some losing and some tough times and some disappointment. And maybe that still happens. Hopefully it's, I mean, heaven forbid if it doesn't. I mean, then we're talking about this team in the next couple of years going through another rebuild, I suppose. I don't know. But you know, where is the overcoming adversity? Where is the resiliency of this club? Where is the mental toughness of this club? Where's the fight? I mean, they just, and it's never, Buck Showalter would tell you this, and any manager worth his salt or any head coach worth his salt would tell you, it's never as bad, truly as bad as it looks when you're at your worst, just like it's never as great as it looks when you're at your best. But man, these guys just look like they're just rolling over. It's almost like they're giving up. And I don't mean that in terms of like they're jaking it, but they just look so defeated. And my goodness, it's April. It's not August 28th. You know, this is, we're not talking about the dog days of the season, you know, dog days of August. It's April. And you know, I get it. Because of the injuries, because of the state of the starting pitching, would I expect this team to have the best record in baseball now? Not even close. But you can't just keep pointing to the pitching or Mike Elias's lousy offseason, if we want to call, you know, just call it that, plain and simple. Or if you don't like the manager's lineups or any of this. And I'm just throwing these out because these are the things you hear fans say right now. And I'm not saying that to be disparaging. Fans are frustrated, and they have every right to be frustrated right now. But I just look at all of this collectively, and I'm just like, where's the fight? Like, it feels like they've given up already. And that's, man, that's a bad reflection on everybody. Everybody, not just Brandon Hyde and Mike Elias, not just the coaching staff. That's everybody. And that's where I look at this thing. And, you know, the question right now for me, and obviously so many people are talking about Brandon Hyde and the way this is going, yeah, it's going to cost him his job. But because you can't fire the entire roster, and you're not going to fire the, ownership's not going to, if they're going to fire Mike Elias, they're not going to do it in April or May. But the question for me isn't who should go, who should be fired. Right now, the question is, like, go back to the, you love to cite this. Who are the pile divers on this team right now? And I mean that collectively. Players, coaches, front office, everyone. Like, who's digging them out of this right now? And man, it just looks like it's just lost at
Well,
sea and they
Lutschman
have no
was the
clue.
guy with the pat on the ass that changed everything in the beginning. And him falling apart last summer and, Westberg not being right, injury-wise, and Henderson not being really ready to go on opening day and hasn't looked himself. And I mean, Mullins looks like he wants to get paid,
Yeah,
right? Like,
Mullins has
you
been
know.
great. He's the one guy that you could kind of put, a couple others. O'Hearn's had a good season. Ramon Arias. I think
When
I
you
said
say
it.
a good season, it's been a month. So
Well,
they've had a good
to this
month.
point, but you know what I mean. Of
Right.
course, it's early. The season's, despite how fatalistic I sound right now, the season is not over. But man,
But
they're
we see
sure as
the
heck making
pitching
it
and
look
say,
like it
where's the
is.
upside on the pitching?
Right.
And that's problematic. It was problematic 6 weeks ago when you and I and Shining got together at Pizza
Yeah.
John's.
Well,
It was problematic 4 weeks ago when you and I got together with Viviano before the season began. Like, we've had these long chats with long-term baseball people again
yeah.
and again. I had Lynn Henning on this week talking about, hey, the Orioles could have dealt for Scooble if they liked him that much. It would have cost them Holiday, but they could have had Scooble if
Yeah.
that's what they wanted to do. That's the cost of getting a number one starter, right? Like, that's the real cost of it. You didn't want to do that last summer. I didn't want to do. Nobody wanted to do that last summer.
You thought these
Now.
guys were going to be special, and as more and more time goes on, you question whether they're special, but
It sounds like
this,
a Chrissy Hynde song, but anyway,
yeah,
that's good.
I know.
Luke Jones is here. Go ahead.
But you look, that's why I said, I said this when it was apparent that Grayson Rodriguez wasn't starting the season or in the rotation. I really said this when Eflin went on the IL. I mean, at that point in time, right there, when you have a rotation that was already a big question mark at best collectively, and you lose your top two projected guys, at that point, I kind of, that's when I started saying to you, they've just got to figure out a way to tread water. Well, they're not treading water. They're sinking, and it's happening rapidly over the last week, especially. But you start looking at it, if you're in this territory now where you're seven under, I mean, who knows what's going to happen over the course of the next week? I mean, Yankees are coming in. I mean, I don't think this is the juggernaut best version of the Yankees we've ever seen, but better than, certainly way better than the Orioles right now. Best in the division. But
And just as a franchise, and this, let me give a little letter to Katie Griggs because I haven't even read my letter out loud. I hope everybody goes and reads my dear Katie Griggs thing. But this is a weekend where, or weekdays, where it's 80 degrees. The Orioles are supposed to be good. The Yankees don't come in four times a year anymore, right? Like, they only come in twice a year. This is one of those ones where you're like, man, we're going to be 17 and 10. We're going to be a game up on first place on the Yankees. They're going to come in here. We're going to have given those that David Rubenstein bobblehead out. We're going to sell out the splash zone. We're going to get 32,000 of our real fans out for a real baseball game on a Monday, a Tuesday, or a Wednesday with the Yankees in. We're going to have this swirl of enthusiasm for baseball. NFL draft's over. The Ravens don't worry about the Ravens. We'll worry about them in September. We're going to play baseball every night, and we're going to build this brand. We're going to build Birdland. We're going to build Insider. We're going to get people back to the ballpark. We're going to make all the white people in Harford County that are afraid of the city come back on a Monday and see the Yankees play and root for Gunner and Adley and J. Yeah, this should be a big week for them in April if they're the franchise that's growing the way that they think that they wanted to grow, the way that I believe they could grow when they finally got new ownership, new leadership, new all of that. And instead, there's not going to be any energy at the ballpark. And that's like part of what they sell on Masson. That's part of what Rob Long and Melanie Newman, like that. Come on down, get your cotton candy. Come on, everybody come down to the ballpark. I mean, come on down. Like, let's be a part of it. And when the team's this bad, to your point, you can't sell that. You don't have that to sell anymore. You don't have the we're young, good looking, we'll be there. We've got the great young players. We lost so we can win. that, it was a rebuild. It wasn't a tank. Well, this is the kind of series, we only get to play the Yankees a couple times a year here, where they've done well against the Yankees the last couple of years. And that's been part of getting people like you and me to buy in, is you're going to show up and have fight against the Yankees and the Red Sox in your own division and do all of that. So here it is, and they stumble in. Now, what if they sweep the Yankees this week somehow? Win a couple of games, 12-9, which is what they're going to have to do. But this is the kind of thing for them, for Katie Griggs taking this job last summer and coming in here and penciling in where the team's going to be on the field. No one ever questioned that they would have that part of it to sell, and they don't now. They don't. And they're not going to have that. And
I mean,
that's tough.
yeah, and I don't care how great you are at your job. I mean, you have this kind of start in contrast to what expectations have been the last couple of years. That's tough to sell.
The
Other
people
than
that are coming to the ballpark are pissed off tonight.
right, and that's the thing. Right now, it's not impacted quite as much right now because a lot, there aren't a ton of people that are walking up to the ballpark the day of the game and buying tickets, right? So, but
Well,
when you
one of the
start,
reasons for that is the team,
well,
like,
what,
they've been
yeah,
bad at doing all of it.
but generally speaking, you don't see it as much of that. I mean, even that you saw 40 years ago. Where this really starts to show up, however, is June, July, August, September, where if this team is out of it, then boy, you better add some bobbleheads and t-shirts and trinkets and all kinds of swag that you can think of because no one's going to come to the ballpark otherwise. So are you feeling that in late April quite as dramatically? Probably not, because a lot of people who have tickets for these few games probably already bought their tickets, a month ago, they looked at, hey, I can't make it to opening day. I'm not going to make it to the first couple home stands. It's cold, all that. Hey, they play the Yankees in late April. The weather should be nice by then. So, they might have good crowds here this week. Who knows? But yeah, in terms of what you said from a big picture standpoint, June, July, August, September, when you see a team that's 10-17 and you're already talking about having to play at a pretty good pace just to get to 87, 88, 89 wins. And still having the pitching concerns that have been there all along. I mean, that's why I said this thing starts to feel late pretty quickly here. So, I mean,
Well, I don't know where the pitching helps coming from even over the hill for
they've got
next
to
year.
hit. I mean,
Right, right, right. Like even if they hit the ball, like
but
where's the
they've got to
pitching
hit the
help
ball.
coming in general if they're not going to go
It
out and
doesn't
spend
matter if
hundreds of
they,
millions of dollars to get it?
but if all these young players, and I'm not ready to say this to be clear. If all these young players like this, if this whole thing is broken and just isn't, I mean, okay, yeah, you can go out and sign a starting pitcher. I mean, what's that going to do? Like,
If your
you've
stars are going to
drafted,
hit 230, you're no
that's
good.
what I
Yeah,
mean. I
right.
mean, like, everything else is enough. That's why, and you and I have sparred about this a little bit. You've talked about the pitching so much, and that was never to say that that wasn't true. But if you're going to start off with what's supposed to be the greatest thing about your team, and it's not even close to great, I mean, it's been below average, then yeah, I don't even care about the pitching at this point in time because their offense stinks right
Let's go
now.
through it. Westberg 217, Rutschman 209, Henderson 220, Mountcastle 207, Holiday 233. He's leading the team. Kerstad 197, Tyler O'Neill, much like Peter King, my dear friend, and I text over the weekend. He said, "I told you so," because he texted me 2 months ago and said he's going to spend 45 games on the DL. And then you have to figure out he might hit 31 home runs in the 90 games he plays, but you have to figure that part out. But he's hurt. Laureano 184, right? Mateo 136, Kowser 125 before he went out. These are batting averages. You don't need to know more than that, right? I just gave you the whole Mullins 279, O'Hearn 303, Urias 317. They've been their three best players.
Oh, and going beyond the batting average, I mean, this team, even last year, even 2 years ago, a criticism that often made me bristle and even get a little prickly was, hearing over and over, well, they're too reliant on the home run. To which I would reply, most good teams in baseball hit home runs. Just the nature of the game in 2025, whether you like it or not. I mean, there are a couple exceptions to that rule, but Yankees hit a lot of home runs, for example. So, but I mean, you look at Adley Rutschman slugging 363. Ryan Mountcastle, a first baseman nester, his slugging percentage is 293. I mean, that's a
Gunnar
utility
Henderson
in.
has four RBIs. Four.
I mean, yeah, you look, so they're not hitting for any power. They've got a couple guys that, Mullins and Rutschman draw walks. That's it. I mean, it's really, really bad right now. And you can't fire the team. I joked with someone after the doubleheader on Saturday. The Orioles put out their roster announcement that Colin Selby has, as the 27th man, has been returned to Triple-A Norfolk. I joked, well, the shame is they can't return anyone else to Norfolk at this point in time. But you can't fire the teams. But that's where you look at this and say, do you need to change the voices? Is there anyone you can bring in? And that's why I think I mentioned this to you last week. You kind of look at this thing now, the way the offense waned over the second half of last year, and they struggled with runners in scoring position. And obviously, Ryan Fuller and Borsholte were gone. But what did they do in terms of replacing their hitting coaches? They promoted Cody Asche, and they promoted another minor league coach as an assistant hitting coach. And they added Tommy Joseph, who was an assistant hitting coach for the Mariners, whose biggest problem last year was what? They couldn't hit. So you kind of look at those moves and you say, was this actually meaningful change, or was this window dressing to kind of sort of make it look like you're appeasing the masses, but not really changing anything about your process? I question their process. It's one thing to say, if one of these guys isn't working out, or in the case of Westberg, he's been banged up, right? They've talked about that. They've talked about that since going back to spring training. Now, we could question whether he should be on the IL then or not, but that's a different conversation. When you have all these guys struggling collectively, other than Cedric Mullins, that makes me question your process. That makes me question your approach. That makes me question your coaching. So that's where I do look at this thing. And as much as these guys talk about trusting the process and staying true to their process, well, how do we know the process is worth anything at this point in time when these are the results you're continuing to get? So that's where I do look at this thing and say, I'm not saying today or tomorrow, but man, if this thing doesn't turn around and start showing not just improvement, and I don't mean taking two of three out of the from the Yankees, I mean like start winning multiple games in a row, start winning some series. They've won two in a row once all year. Start doing some things that are more indicative of a competent, solid, competitive baseball team. I don't know how Brandon Hyde survives. I don't know how this entire coaching staff survives. And to be clear, I don't know what the solution is. And that's why this is a disaster. But you can't continue with the status quo either, because, I hear some of the quotes coming out of whether it's Hyde. Dean Kramer said something along the lines on Sunday of, it's really tough to lose a baseball season in April. And I almost felt like that was subconsciously, like you're saying the quiet part out loud right there. These guys are talking about how, they get down when things aren't going well. It's just like, where's the leadership in terms of the coaching staff, and where's the leadership in terms of players? Because it has to be multi-pronged. As much as people will sing the praises of Earl Weaver and he's in the Hall of Fame and all of that, you hear those, if you heard those guys talk about it at the time, go back to 68, 69, 70, 71 at the very least. I can hear it. I remember watching this. I can't remember what, it was an Orioles video at some point. It was Elrod Hendricks talking about, Frank Robinson, someone didn't do something the way they were supposed to. Earl Weaver didn't even have to say anything because Frank Robinson was going to let you know. Who is that guy? And I don't mean a Hall of Fame outfielder right now, But who is that voice in this clubhouse right now that is taking someone to task if they need to
Where's
be
Kevin
taken?
Millar when I need him? Where's
Yeah.
Rick Sutcliffe when I
Who
need him?
is,
Where's that guy?
whether it's chewing someone's you know what out, whether it's putting an arm around someone and saying, hey, it's okay, whether it's giving someone the proverbial kick in the butt,
Well, this
you
might
know.
have been McCann last year as a backup catcher who might have been a little bit of that kind of guy in their locker room, like a little bit, right?
I mean,
Maybe.
and that, sure, I'll buy that. Although I would say James McCann was on the team second half of last year when they were started to fall apart.
But I'm just thinking from a personality
No, I
standpoint,
under,
that's supposed to be
no, I,
Rutschman and Henderson, right? If Rutschman and Henderson have to be that for this to
you'd
be,
like it to be?
it's not going to be Holliday who's barely shaving. It's not going to be Westberg who's hurt. I don't think it's going to be
But
Cedric
this,
Mullins who's playing for a free agent contract, quite
Cedric's much
frankly.
more of a quieter lead by example. I see. I think that's part of the problem. I think they have a lot of guys that fit that mold. You know me, man. I'm not the one that wants to sit here and just flap my gums about team chemistry and things that you can't quantify. But
But
just
we all
because,
saw Ray Lewis.
because you can't quantify something does not mean it does not exist, right? So I do think, and this even goes back to a couple years ago. Look at some of the guys that they had at that point. Kyle Gibson, maybe Kyle Gibson's going to help with this. I'm not saying it's going to be the end all be all, but maybe Kyle Gibson will be something that will help them from an intangible standpoint that is not going to fix it all, but will be something that they've been lacking because Charlie Morton is not performing at any kind of a level that makes him even a credible option to do that. You need your leaders can't be the worst players on the team. And Charlie Morton's the worst player on the team right now. So even if you would say, well, he's 41. He's a good guy, all that. No one's going to listen to the guy that has a 10 and a half ERA. I mean, it's just, they doesn't mean they're disrespectful, but it's not going to carry any weight. But I do think it's very fair to ask. And this was even asked at the end of last year. And Mike Elias even acknowledged it to the possibility, I suppose, even though ultimately they didn't really make a move of this ilk. But, who are the grown-ups in that clubhouse right now? Who are the grown-ups? And I don't mean being unprofessional. I mean guys that have been through it, guys that are accomplished players, guys that will give you professional at bats, guys that will go out there and give you six innings when you really need it, which Charlie Morton now has failed to do that multiple times when they've been in a position where they've needed it. But I mean, who's that guy for them right now? I mean, it's doesn't feel like there is any leadership right now. And that's a poor reflection on Brandon Hyde, and it's a poor reflection on the makeup of the players themselves, and it's a poor reflection on Mike Elias for maybe that being a blind spot. With all the analytics and predictive models and technology and there might be some paralysis by analysis going on as well, when it comes to their hitters, who knows? But it really feels like there are some intangibles that are just not there for this team. And maybe that's something that, not maybe, they definitely need to look at that. Problem is, the time to go get a guy or two like that was the offseason,
Yeah,
not
Garrett
early
Crochet's
May.
pitching elsewhere right now. It's a
Well,
little
I
late for
mean,
that, right?
and look, great baseball players, yes, but I'm talking more in terms of like, the makeup of these guys, and when things are when you're struggling, who are the guys saying, we got this, we're fine? The Orioles in 2012 and 14 at the very least, they had veteran players. They had some guys that had been around. I mean, we've talked about Nelson Cruz, the impact that he had on a young Manny Machado and a young Jonathan Scope. And oh yeah, it helped that Nelson Cruz also hit 40 home runs, let's be clear. But like they don't have guys like that. Their older guys are guys that Charlie Morton, his performance has been awful. Gary Sanchez, his performance has been awful. So I mean it's just
By the way, Santander is hitting 179 in Toronto, just as a leadership
sure.
example. We got to take a break. Luke is here. We'll continue on. Yankees are in town. He's at the ballpark. Any breaking news happens on the WNST text service, as it did for the NFL draft over the weekend on Wednesday. I'm wearing my Coco shirt. We're going to be over with Marcel at Coco's in Lauraville. Back to the Future scratch-offs. Delicious crab cakes, crab melts, Orioles games on the television on Wednesday night as well. We will be at Red Brick Station on the 7th of May in White Marsh with Bill Blocker over there and Paul. We're looking forward to getting over there and doing that as well. Plenty of baseball, plenty of football, plenty of conversation. All of it lives at WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, where we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.